Blog Talk Radio.
About that time, they asked me, where was I going, you know? I said, well, you have to be reasonable. You know, I've never been away from home before. And besides, they gave me a good deal. And I think that Uncadelica is, you know, the nation that, you know, I would like to live in.
Welcome to the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. Tonight's feature is we're in part four of Pawn Sovereignty, Sharpen Black Perspective on Americanization, Africa, War, and Reparations by Ezra Aharon, Professor of Political Science at Delaware State University and HBCU. And tonight, discussion from the text will be on equality versus equity. And I'm your host, Charles Williams. I'm joined with my lovely wife, Jalavet. Say hello, Jalavet.
Hello, Jalavet.
Hey.
You know what? It's been 3 years. I think that has gotten a little bit played. What you think?
You think so? Because, you know, I didn't do it 1 week and you missed it.
I sure did. I didn't realize you had not done that.
And so I said I'd bring it back.
Okay, well, you know, it's up to you, whatever.
I mix it up. Sometimes I won't say it, then sometimes we just never know. Be paying attention.
You gotta be paying attention. Okay. All right, so this is a good chapter of this book. You were reading some of it to me because I had not studied ahead. I'm going to just confess that right up front. And so, but what you did share with me was very interesting. I can't wait to hear more and discuss it. So let's go.
All right.
Oh, to let everybody know, I'm sorry, I didn't announce that you can get this book anywhere. It's called Pawn Sovereignty, but you can find a link to the information on African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club on Facebook. And you can find that at facebook.com/AKBeyondTheBook. And you can also follow us on Twitter. And be sure and follow us here on BTR so that you can get reminders for upcoming shows. And if you'd like to contribute to the discussion, feel free to call in 323-580-5707. All right.
And for our iTunes subscribers, they can also download the show on iTunes as well.
Right. You sure can. You can access the show on iTunes.
There you go.
And so you can listen to it whenever you get ready.
Right. Do it.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. It says here on page 68, this is the last section of the second chapter. And here he goes. He says, there's a notion among Black America that since we helped build America, it belongs to us too. The companion thought to this that we must therefore continue to fight for equality. However, based upon America's brand of democracy, there are definite limitations to equality that make it necessary for us to rethink the specifics of what we are fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's it couldn't be emphasized any greater, I tell you.
All right, that's a mouthful right there.
Sure is. And, wow. And here we go. He says, though equality isn't an admirable pursuit, it is a constitutional misnomer that's more ideal than real.
Mm-hmm.
Equality is a tricky and abstract concept that does not mean identical in measure. It has no objective political or economic applications, and it is not conferred by citizenship. So once this ideal is separated from the real, it's obvious that Black people are not the political or economic equals of whites. We do not have equal political representation or equal levels of capital. equality is an inaccurate term to comparatively define the life conditions of millions of black people that live in poverty versus that of a handful of whites that own the country. Go ahead.
You know, it's funny. He was talking about when the author was with us last week, and he spoke about, you know, this tricky way. And I guess what he did is he brought an awareness to me that now when I'm listening to certain things, I can apply his concept. And that is that the language, the use, the effective use of the language, they have mastered this rhetoric, this effective use of ways in which we're always actually showing deference to them.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about we want equality, equality or becoming equal with what?
Right. Ice Cube said it on, was it a Death Certificate album, 1992, 91. He said, who are they to be equal to?
Right. What are you, you're asking to be equal to?
A monster.
A group of people. Right. That, you know, and so I was just listening to you, you know, read that excerpt from that chapter, and it's like, yeah, what does that really mean? We're saying that what, and we've had this discussion as well, that many, there's many a black supremacist that actually want to supplant the system of white supremacy with a system of black supremacy and not a system necessarily of justice, or simply want to get their part in this giant monstrosity that has been created.
Right.
Right. And so all of those things have to be considered, as he was saying, when you're speaking, when you're saying these words, and we're saying that they are somehow elevated almost intrinsically.
Right.
As opposed to they are elevated by theft, by graft, by murder, you know.
Yeah.
By every other heinous act that you can think of.
All these machinations have given them
right.
a superior or advantage. Right. That's what we're talking about, superior supremacy. That means having the power to dictate circumstances and conditions of anything, and the power to change the rules if the conditions seem to be unfavorable to them.
Right.
And we complain. Black people are always complaining about, oh, they change rules because they fought for supremacy, so they can do that to make sure they always have the advantage in all cases and circumstances that come before them.
Right. What do we say all the time? It's this is their game. This is their party.
Right. And if you want to be a winner.
Right. Why would, if I'm playing the game and I'm winning, I set up the rules. I'm sorry. Why are you begging me to change the rules? And to what advantage is it of mine to change the rules so that all of a sudden this perceived game or fight or whatever you want to call it could then be fair?
Right, because if you really want to win, you play your own game by your own rules.
They have no, there's no advantage. They gain nothing.
Right. I'm just saying that the black position.
No, I know what you're saying. I just wanted to put that out there, that we don't really think wholly. What we spend a lot of time doing is parroting. We repeat what we've heard, just really not. I'm not saying that in a bad way or a malicious way. I'm saying that we just hear it so many times, and we just assume that someone's already thought that through, and that's obviously right. Because we've heard it so many times. We need to have equality, and we need to fight for this and fight for that. You know, and when we're not really thinking about what is it, what seriously, and rethinking these things so that we can speak accordingly, what it is that we really need to accomplish. Because it's just like anybody who practices deviant behavior. These people practice deviant behavior. That's why there has to be affirmative action. Somebody has to tell you not to practice, you know, discrimination. Someone has, you know, that's why, you know, you have, you know, black people being profiled, or, you know, the stop and frisk where, you know, they did the panel where five blacks, five whites, all five, you know, four of the blacks had been stopped and frisked, except for the one who had just recently moved to the city, and none of the whites. And, you know, when you have someone who's practicing this type of deviant behavior, it's just like someone on drugs or something. Whatever it is that you're doing, you're not interested in stopping it. you know, the only way, there has to be an intervention. And what we're trying to do, I think, as a community, we're trying to have an intervention. We're trying to come to them and say, excuse me, Mr. White Man, would you please stop doing crack because it's really hurting me and my family? Could you stop that behavior? And really, the only way that an intervention works is that they have to really care about the person who is petitioning them to stop the behavior. They have to love them, care for them, see how their behavior is destructive to the person that they love, and so then they can start the process of trying to clean up and stop the deviant behavior. But that's not what we're not in a situation like that. They don't love you. We're not, you know, but we act like they do. We act like they love us, and we're gonna tell them on themselves, and they are somehow going to change because they are the moral authority, and they know what is right and just and true, and they're just going to do it.
Yeah, that's what we do, because we don't want to take the responsibility that belongs to us to change our circumstances.
Right.
And so we pass that off on them, and so when circumstances don't change to our benefit, we can say, well, you know, they wouldn't do this. It's very passive and very apathetic.
Right.
And it's not empowering at all.
No.
And so they managed to persuade lots of other people to follow that course that is well paved. And, you know, once you lay out a road, you know, so many people will travel along it, you know, as long as there's so much traffic, they'll say, it was easier to travel on this highway than the other. You know?
Right.
So, but the rough road sometimes is the best way to get to where you're going.
Right.
But, you know, because those people are not taking you to a better place. They're just taking, you know, it's an easier, you know.
Right. Route to your destruction.
To your destruction, right. It's
more
comfortable. They got a lot of rest areas and convenience stores along the way.
Right.
End of the line is a slaughterhouse.
There you go.
You see?
All right, I'm sorry. I got a little carried away there. Okay, you can go ahead.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your zeal.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, here we go. This section isn't that long, but it can get away from us, you know. But here we go. He says, there are daily reminders of societal inequalities. In terms of justice, white juries have historically convicted blacks based on color alone. The judicial system works more favorably for anyone able to afford dream team legal representation. Those lacking resources will receive poor man's justice. Justice in many cases is a function of money and name recognition, not equality. Money, political clout, and race have and always will be influential factors of society. But to keep our focus on idealism instead of realism, the establishment gladly joins in to help us to chant the mantra of equality, equality, equality. What does this mean? You know, it places the onus on us to work within the existing racist framework of democracy rather than holding the government accountable for using using democracy as a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
See, now I added the racist in there. That's not in the text. I just wanted to say that for, you know, clarity.
Mm-hmm.
He said, 12 years after leaving office, Thomas Jefferson made an interesting observation regarding the difficulty of equally assimilating blacks into white society. On February the 8th, 1821, he wrote, quote, nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than these people are to be free. He means these people are the black folks.
Mm-hmm.
Or Africans, African captives. Nor is it less certain that the two races, equally free, cannot live. Now I say this again. Equally free cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them. It is still in our power to direct the process of emancipation and deportation peaceably and in such slow degree as that the evil will wear off insensibly and their place will be pari passu, filled up by white laborers. End quote.
All right.
Now, wasn't that a mouthful? Now, he basically is telling you that, because Professor Aharon does the commentary, so no need for me to do it.
Right.
He says, although by all objective measures, Jefferson was a racist, in this instance, he was speaking more as a realist. He understood that society would always be skewed to favor whites. Because he said it is still in our power. So, you know, law, we in power, we can do what we want to, which is we're not going to share none of this with these people that we've captured and abused. And we're going to kick you out of here, you know, smooth.
Mm-hmm.
We through with you because we ain't sharing it. Basically, what he's saying.
All right.
Now, he said the character and the intentions of European Americans would prevent rights and opportunities from being administered on a fair and impartial basis. And as existing disparities verify, his words were on the mark. In saying that the two races equally free cannot live under the same government. The operative words are equally free.
Hmm?
The reason we have thus far lived under the same government is because we are not equally free. Jefferson saw unavoidable pitfalls of slave descendants trying to live as equals within a society controlled by descendants of slave masters. He knew that the extremes of this relationship had all the makings of a serious political and racial challenges, since one party would have to yield to the foreign ways and authority of the other. He also knew that Euro-Americans were predisposed to favor themselves. Though this does not make them inherently bad, it would be difficult for any people to govern a different race with the same fervor and benevolence they accord to themselves, and it is naive to think otherwise. Now, I'd like to comment on that right there, and I know you're ready to join in with me. Black folks have been conditioned to not favor black folks.
Right.
That's a part of the slave altruistic conditioning, is to favor the slave master and to show partiality toward white society, which is why some black people say, oh, I want equality, I want to live in free and harmony with you, master, I want to move to your neighborhood, go to school, and intermarry with you, as long as we will surrender our culture, our sense of identity, in order to be one with you on your terms. That's what basic integration in American concept is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not saying, hey, we're going to I bring my culture, you bring your culture, and we'll sit and we're going to function as equals, because you can't do that because of the nature of and history of our interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Dictate that some restitution must be made if we're going to show mutual respect, which white folks do not respect black folks.
Right.
And that presents another serious problem which cannot be resolved. Based upon our conduct and our response to their crimes against us to date. What would you have to say on that?
I agree, 100%.
Okay.
You thought I was gonna say more than that, didn't you?
Oh no, I was looking at the time. I was just checking it. But right.
We're fine on time. I agree with what you're saying. I'm not just gonna think of a new way to say it.
Thank you.
That's absolutely right, what you're saying. That's absolutely right. See, I almost did it right there. That's correct, and I agree.
Okay. And I wanted to say, like you were saying, doesn't make them inherently bad. And some of our people would say, oh, they're being bad because they're not showing us the same favoritism that we show them. No, see, that is normal.
Right.
What they're doing. We are the ones whom are abnormal.
Are abnormal, right.
We don't show favoritism to ourselves.
No one does that. No culture does that.
But see, it's so, right. No culture does that, but since it is so common, so ubiquitous throughout blacks, Americans, or even colonial African slave culture, that we think that it's normal because it's common. Just since everybody's eating monkey brains, it has become normalized in society. That doesn't mean you should be eating monkey brains. It's just because everybody's doing it. You should, we can go on with this, what everybody's doing and nobody should be doing. You know what I'm saying? just not be gross.
Right.
You know, you just got to understand just basic survival, which is why we are not really surviving. Well, I said on two episodes ago, I said we are just the most compensated servant group. And that's, you know, we're going to get to that in this section right here.
Mm-hmm.
He says, equality is also non-existent because our relationship with Euro-Americans is based on unprincipled arrangements. He said, we did not determine, nor were we fully consulted on decisions of our post-emancipation fate. All policies and procedures were dictated to us based on what best benefited the government and white America. And the government is white America, really.
Correct.
We had no choice other than to abide, and white America felt no reason, and still don't feel any reason, to respect us or regard us as equals in any form or fashion, I'd like to add that.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are today, still struggling to receive a fair rationing of riches from the country that supposedly belongs to us, too. Yeah, that's something. Yeah, keep working at that, playing out. Rethinking the specifics of what we are fighting for, the fact cannot be overlooked that America is a business and nothing but a business. Don't we always say America is a business? Corporate America is America.
Right.
America is a corporation. It is not a traditional nation based upon the population with a common ancestry and a common ancestor and language. That's what a traditional nation is. We have people, we have an oligarchy of people who formulated America, devised it as a business, and then invited other people in to become citizens if they submit to its ideologies. And that made them American by conversion, just like any other religion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So American is a business, but I would also say, in another note, that it's a religion too. But the author here isn't dealing with that spiritual aspect right now. He's dealing with it as a business.
Right.
That's something I do on another time, on my own critique essay I write.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he says here that on page 70, second paragraph, he said, rethinking the specifics of what we're fighting for, the fact cannot be overlooked. Oh, as America's a business, nothing but a business. Business, not equality, is its lifeblood. President Calvin Coolidge once said that the business of America is business. Everything in this country is about business in one form or another.
Right.
A few weeks after the Columbia Space Shuttle accident, American Historical Society was hawking a Space Shuttle commemorative coins for $20. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It said, so they probably from anything. They're trying to make some money off everything, whether it's tragedy.
5013C.
That's right, 513C. 911, they got T-shirts, they got coins, they got everything. They getting paid off whatever go on and what people understand or attach some kind of memory to, they're gonna get piss aid off of.
Mm-hmm. Everything. Spirituality on down, everything is a business.
That's right. We're saying, regardless of laws of belief, all the idealism put aside, our relationship with America has and always will be based on economics, not equality.
Hey.
Yeah. You want to say something right there?
No, I said that's correct.
Oh, there you go. The reason Black America is so in love with this country is primarily because of economic and business opportunities. Right. That's what we talked about in the first episode. We talked about the matter of silver and gold that Black America is obsessed with, not about justice.
Mm.
Black America does not care about justice, the ancestors, and law losing history. I mean, not even economics in the context of the other, but really thinking about economics for the sake of economics.
Correct.
Just to have and, you know, have a good time.
Right.
Because
that would be economic justice.
Yeah, that would be economic justice, but they ain't interested in that.
Right.
Kind of justice, right. No entire race of people will fight and die to integrate with a poor people in an underdeveloped nation. People are not standing in long lines waiting for visas and risking their lives at sea to sneak over the border into countries like El Salvador or Bangladesh. And under no circumstances would we tolerate the indecencies, indifferences, and inhumanities of America if it were a poor country. sovereignty would have made sense to us a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because of economics, people from all over the world yearn to come into America in hopes of becoming a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
All right.
So you got to understand that everybody is on America's jock because it's got money.
Right.
That's it. And they know as long as they got money, all the nations are going to be on their knees ready to perform fellatio.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Yes.
And that's what you're doing. That's what everybody's talking about. Oh, we got to do this because I'm going to get this grant money. That's what you're doing. You're getting down, you know, getting that network together. So.
Wait a minute.
You know, I'm calling it, I'm putting it out there. That's what you got all your Pope belly preachers and all your con men, business guys with their slick suits on talking about forget about justice and equality because they trying to get a part of this blood money. Talk about blood diamonds a few years ago. They want the blood money from the blood of their ancestors. Now, do we all need money to survive the economic system? Yes, but we're not willing, some people are not willing to sacrifice their cultural and historical and spiritual integrity, prostitute that in order to get extra gain or be included in America's nightmare.
Right.
Some people just trying to make a living, and if they make a good living, fine. But others are willing to exploit their own culture, their people, sacrifice the political and social and spiritual futures of their neighbor in order to gain a better share, a bigger share of the booty from the war that has been going on against people of their own heritage. And that's what we are speaking against. All right?
All right.
You get paid as a man's sense of justice, a sense of livelihood, but not trying to exploit and prostitute your people in order to get ahead. That's the wrong method. So it's not, you know, so you don't try to get rich by any means necessary. You know, any means within certain kinds of reason, and that should be the reason is that to uplift your people and save your culture. Now, that's by any means, but not in spite of your culture. So I don't want to, you know, some people that try to criticize and say, oh, y'all against getting paid, you know.
Right.
I have to make that soapbox testimonial for those kinds of individuals so they can get the guilties and raise up.
Right.
You know, we had that problem before on a show, remember?
Right, I remember.
Yeah. But America's pillars of democracy, capitalism, just have to make an announcement, you straight.
Yeah, I can go ahead. We have about 3 minutes left. So greetings to everybody in the chat room. They're just guests. No one signed in. So let me just tell you that if you don't call in within the next couple of minutes, you won't be able to hear the remainder of the show. So if you'd like to hear the rest of, I think we're about to go into the bitter hour. You can call 323-580-5707. Otherwise, you can hear the remainder of the show in the archive. And we will see you next week, same time. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, or you can get updates for upcoming book club meetings at facebook.com/AKBeyondTheBook. All right, that's it.
All right.
I think you have like 2 minutes.
You know, I kind of started bitter hour a little bit early.
Yeah, you did. You got into bitter hour just a little bit early.
Sorry, that was supposed to be for the time. I'm gonna hold some of it back. I'm gonna hold it. I'm doing the best I can because it's just burning. We was on the show, and we had this woman on a panel, and she got the guilties and came on out the closet and said that she was selling out. Remember?
Yes, she did. She went ahead and just admitted it.
Right.
Yes, I sold out, and I'm getting paid, and there you go.
Told us what we was going to do about it.
What are you going to do about it, right?
I mean, I wasn't.
I thought that was really great. I didn't. I saw I saw that as a success.
I did. I was happy, but I was like, wasn't nobody even talking to you about that?
Right. It was just guilt. She just was guilty and just said, well, I sold out. I forgot about that. Thanks, Blog Talk.
That's okay.
I forgot that they do that. Mm. Anyway, so yeah, she just like said, I sold out and we weren't even talking about you, but it's sometimes when people are talking and it affects you, then you think that somebody's talking about you or to you, and we had no idea who she was, so she could have stayed quiet and stayed under the radar, but she announced herself and said, yeah, I sold out, I sure did, and I'm getting paid, and what are you going to do about it?
Matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get that show.
Nothing. We're not going to do anything about it. We weren't even talking to you.
I'm going to get that show. I'm going to post it up on the event page. and so that person that sell out can be, heard. So people can hear that person just come on out.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about, because a lot of people don't know that that's what they do, because they act like they, doing something else. But you had a confession live on the air.
Right. A lot of people act like they don't know what that is, or that they certainly wouldn't do that, or, that there's some confusion by way of what it is that I'm selling. Well, this book is talking about what you're selling. You're pawning your sovereignty.
Exactly. Exactly.
We don't have to, there's no question about it. You know what you're selling.
Right, and they try to treat us like when we're accusing so-called black leaders for doing that, they didn't say that that's what they were doing. You're just blaming them. You're just, falsely accusing them of this grand cultural crime. And the fact of the matter is, it's not a false accusation. It's a true accusation.
Right.
And we had a person to confess without even be questioned or prompted. They just volunteered that only because there was no punishment to be made.
Right.
I couldn't, she knew I couldn't punish her for it, so she freely admitted it. But I'm sure if her life was on the line for a firing squad, she'd been swaying up and down on stacks of Bibles and any other holy book she can get her hands on, that was not what she was doing, or that she was somehow ignorant of all matters whatsoever.
Right.
But the fact, we got to be, we got to keep our head in the game that we playing life and death here for the future.
Right.
You got to know that at all times. Okay. Now, here we go. America's pillars of democracy, capitalism, and Euro-Christianity revolve around an axis of economics, not equality. Retail sales averaging over $170 billion in the last few Christmas seasons, and untold billions in tithes and television evangelism constitute part of economics of Christianity. Capitalism has absolutely nothing to do with equality, and it is by no means democratic. There is no such thing as democratizing of capital. You don't vote on the cost of high-priced gas and oil used in your car and home. You don't vote on mortgage or interest rates, and you don't vote for who owns or controls natural resources. So your social equality that you think you're striving for with your vote is not going to get you control of the levers of power that run the economic system that is America. So without control over the economic system, you have no power.
Right.
There is no equality. That's what he's basically telling you. That's an illusion that you're chasing. So your sovereignty basically is worth more than the pursuit of these things, these ideas, because they're not even things in terms of in a tangible, earth, concrete sense. It's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He said, there are economic, political, and philosophical barriers to true equality that no amount of assimilating can remove or surmount. However, one of the best ways to circumvent these barriers is to shift the emphasis of our fight. Instead of focusing on equality, we need to shift our focus to that of business.
Mm-hmm.
Other people may not regard America as a business, but there was never a time when our relationship with America was not based on business. Slavery was clearly business, and what we now refer to as equality is really but a warped business in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
During slavery, Euro-Americans undoubtedly reaped all financial advantages. Now, under the warped arrangement of equality, they have the best of both worlds, because not one penny of their ill-gotten gain, blood money, was ever shared or redistributed among us, black people. They clearly set the clock of equality to start ticking in 1964 with the Civil Rights Act, after all the damages of 350 years of slavery and segregation had been done. In this so-called era of equality, we are expected to forfeit the past and forget about centuries of benefits they unjustly reap. That's their head start on your back. If this is equality, then what would an example of inequality? What would be an example of inequality? This is the economic coin flip version of heads they win, tails we lose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If you think about that one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game we playing.
Right.
No win situation. Okay. Equality changed the terms of profiteering, but not the condition that business is the basis of the relationship. European Americans are no longer profiting from us as slaves, but as the primary owners and controllers of all major business and industry. They profit no less from black labor. And Dr. Amos Wilson said that in one of his lectures, he said that black people, the only thing we have, we offer that we have, that they let us have, is labor. And we sell that labor in their market. However, the market that we're selling is a buyer's market, meaning that the buyer, that is European Americans, dictate to us, black folks, the price of our labor. So we have not sought to gain power over our only commodity, and that's time.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have nothing if we don't dictate the terms of how we manage that resource. So, you know, he says, so by accepting the ideal of equality, our attention is diverted from economic correlation between past injustices and present disparities. Okay?
Yes.
So, you know, we got to get that together so that we can understand what we need. We need equality to actually be something synonymous with power, but we know that equality, from reading this book and just careful observation, is nothing more than an illusion to keep us from pursuing power and keeping us in the current state of despair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm gonna skip over a lot of stuff right here.
Okay.
But here we go. It says, eliminating all diversions and objectively examining our presence in America from a business perspective, you will find that we have an exceptional form of investment that was capitalized with the rare currencies of blood, sweat, and unpaid wages. Chances are that we will never achieve the elusive goal of equality, but we already have equity.
Right.
Needs to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Equity is the case. And so equity in this case is simply the vested stake and monetary worth of our human contribution that were withheld from 1619 until 1865. For all practical purposes, equity is far more tangible than equality. Whereas equality is abstract and non-objective, equity is measurable, divisible, and transferable. So, you got to look at that.
Mm-hmm.
So people who want to allow themselves to be disarmed from pursuing the path of gaining equity, which is, you know, controlling the market of the labor and not pursuing some abstract, unrealistic concept of social equality that is unattainable, you know, and switch it over, then that's why we meet so much resistance when we start talking about it. They say, oh, you know, you create more problems, and, you know, because when you start talking like that, that's when you're really making some progress. The path where you get the most resistance is really where the cheddar is,
all right,
where the gold is. When you see them all compressing, lining up, taking arms and locking each other arm in arm, now you know you're going to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they're sitting there agreeing with you with this equality talk, you ain't nothing. You're a fool from that point of view. And so you'll never get to meet your respect of these people, so then equality is unattainable.
Mm-hmm.
And you only get equality when you have the power to defend your sovereignty and impose that sovereignty over your enemy. So, I'm gonna mention a few, a little bit more, because I know we're almost out of here.
Yes.
He says, reparations do not have anything to do with inferiority, equality, or superiority. Reparations concern principles of universal justice and moral responsibilities that transcend issues of race. Moreover, it has nothing to do with how much money Bill Cosby or Oprah Winfrey has. And most significantly, the offending party is morally disqualified from determining the means and the level of redress for the injured party. And that would pose a conflict like the proverbial wolf guarding the chicken coop.
Mm.
Our mistake is that we have allowed European Americans to continually play conflicting roles as judge and jury of their own acts of inhumanity. And it was far from the end of the chapter, but that's the party note, and you all can read the rest of that on your own when you buy the book.
But I just said that earlier. I said we're going to them and asking them to police themselves. How insane is that?
That's insane.
How insane do we have to be to ask, you know, the criminal to please do something about these criminals? Oh, yeah, okay. Where do you do that at?
You go to court to get the criminal judge to prosecute the criminal cop committing a crime on you, which your presence in their court is a crime in itself.
Right.
The fact that you are in America is a crime. You was
the result of a crime.
Result of a crime. Everything is criminal. There is no justice. You can't get justice from criminality.
This is some kind of bizarro thing. And I think the most bizarre part is that we act like it's too difficult to understand. But it's not. We know.
We know.
We just, I think, feel so hopeless and feel that we can't do anything about it. So we just go along to get along, you know.
Right. It's easy to just lay down and close your eyes and imagine that you're somewhere on the beach while you're being brutally raped.
How did I know you were going to go with the rape scenario? See what I'm saying?
That's because that's what it is.
It is, yes. It is. I agree. It is.
We in bitter hour, so we can do that.
Yes. During the bitter hour, we can discuss the rape of the African in America.
By the European,
yes. And who has taught so, you know, diligently his, you know, peers to do the same.
And tell you not to talk about it.
Right, and tell you don't talk about it and that you should get over it immediately.
You're part of the problem if you keep bringing that up.
Part of the problem. We have to stop talking about racism because it's just, you keep talking about it, then that just keeps dragging up old stuff.
They're going to rape you again.
See, now.
Because you didn't learn your lesson the first time.
Oh, you caught me off guard with that one.
No.
Okay, so anyway.
Your zipper's going down, you know what I'm saying?
Right, okay. Well, all right, okay. We'll see you next week. Same time, same bad channel. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Oh, we got more.
No, we ain't got no more. Bye.
All right, bye.
Peace.